Hello and welcome to episode 104 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week we'll be looking at Good Omens, Supergirl, how not to play Fallout 3, and our feature will be discussing what happened with this summer's box office. Nerds.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
We have no cookie this week, but are joined by Chris Nichols, who not only is a huge Doctor Who fan, but once let me letter and his steampunk comic, Arthur Schilling.
Hello!
Like the way he said let.
Let, yeah. I don't know, did I bend his arm? Did I make threats? No, I didn't do either of those intimidation tactics, so it was being let to.
Okay.
Yeah, I was allowed to letter. Yes. Yeah. Let's go with that.
It was a very good job as well.
As ever, you can find the notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can comment and find links to our social accounts. Plus, you can get in touch and ask us questions or comment on the show by email at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk, or you could tweet at us via @nerdspodcast. But the news this week, I think this is a bit of a surprising announcement in that the BBC announced last week that Good Omens is being dramatised for BBC Radio 4. They started recording last week at a secret location. And Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett are both involved in helping to record this show, basically, which is going to be going out over December this year.
This is rather excellent.
I'm assuming that somebody thought, God, we need to do this sooner rather than later because of, you know, poor Terry, basically.
And the success of Neverwhere last year as well. Or was it the year before?
Yeah. But I'm thinking more just because obviously they're both sort of like a bit hands-on involvement, and I think they've lent their voices to a role or two. So better to try and do it now rather than next year. Because not to be negative about Mr. Pratchett. Is he a Sir Terry Pratchett at this point? If not,
I think we'll just assume he is.
Yeah.
He is because he knights people. he knights people at his conventions.
But not to be too negative, but it could be, you know, a year's time from now could be a major difference for somebody like Pratchett now, unfortunately. So it's a good thing they're finally doing this. And it's one of the greatest collaborations Good Omens was within sort of fantasy genre fiction in the past, 30 years?
Yeah.
It's quite something. Has anyone read it recently, though? Because I'm struggling to remember the outline at the moment.
Not recently, but it's really stuck into my mind from when I did read it. When I was a lot younger.
Would you like to explain the basic story a moment for our listeners who haven't read it, but obviously should in the very near future?
If you're familiar with The Omen, the American horror movie, it's kind of that, but given a British twist. What if the son of the devil was swapped at birth with just some ordinary kid? And then he's growing up in semi-suburban England and finds out about his powers. That's kind of it, with Lucifer and the devil and the angel chasing after him. And those two names have completely eluded me now.
I think we've got them in the show notes. It is Asphiel and Crowley.
Yeah, that's the ones. All kind of updated modern witch hunting and things like that. As you can expect, Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, amazing writing and some of the best jokes in literature. Very British style of just ongoing jokes that pop up several pages after you originally hear them.
They have got quite a few interesting names to actually voice this dramatisation, because they've got people like Colin Morgan from Merlin, we've got Josie Lawrence from Skins and EastEnders. Paterson Joseph from Peep Show and Green Wing. obviously, as we said, Neil and Terry are in it. They've got Mark Heap, who was in Spaced, Green Wing, and Stardust, as Asphiel, and they've got, I can never pronounce his surname,
Peter Serafinovich,
who has obviously recently been in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's going to be Crowley. And they got a lot of Brits really in it, you know, from stuff. We've got Clive Russell, Julia Deakin, Louise Brealey, Simon Jones, Phil Davis, Mark Benton, to obviously, you know, name but a few. And yeah, I don't normally look forward to things on BBC Radio 4, but I'm looking forward to this. So I think I will be catching it in December when they release it. I'm not sure what specific date. They haven't said the specific date they're actually going to air it yet. But yeah, a dramatisation of a book about an alternative interpretation of the ending of the world. It's cool.
May I admit something here?
Sure.
I've never read it.
You should probably read it. It's not a long book.
I'm getting that, yes.
It's certainly far shorter than, say, like American Gods by Gaiman, which is just, you know, it's, I think it's probably one of the longest things he's written, actually, now that I think about it.
So it would be interesting to hear from an adult reading it, because I think it is more aimed at a young teen audience, the writing style and the such, because it was written back when Terry was at the initial stages of the Discworld and things like that. So it'd be interesting to see how an adult perceives it and whether they have as much love for it as someone who read it when they were much younger.
I read it when I was in college, but, you know, I find it really hard to remember things other than stuff I've reread since sort of like before going to uni, because I read so much when I was at uni, because English degrees do that to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm going to move us on to our next story. It's not the... I don't know, it seemed kind of big in some places and then kind of fizzled out sort of elsewhere, but it looks like Supergirl could be heading to the small screen, as in, like, properly for her own series, not a continuation of Smallville, I suspect. But Michael Green, whose name I'm pretty sure has popped up on this podcast before.
Yeah,
because the combination of his name plus, oh, he wrote and produced shows like Smallville and Heroes. I'm like, yes, this is sounding familiar. He's currently shopping around as the Supergirl sort of TV series, but nobody's picked it up yet. Thoughts?
Well, don't make it like Smallville.
That would probably help. Isn't that, like, certainly the first two seasons where it's, oh, look, it's somebody who's been in contact with Kryptonite of the week. Which,
yeah, I rapidly fell off that series.
Because the problem is that when they did that, it was after Buffy had abandoned doing Monster of the Week. It was after X-Files had abandoned properly doing sort of like bad guy monster thing of the week and was sort of looking for more joined up stories. Even Roswell, which it managed to kick off the air, wasn't really doing Monster of the Week when the first two series of Smallville aired. Yet Smallville managed to, well, I mean, Buffy wound up naturally, X-Files wound up naturally, and Roswell was kicked off the face of the planet by Smallville for some reason that I still don't fathom. Am I the only person? I'm the only person here that obviously liked Roswell, but then I was the target market.
It was all right, kind of, you know, watched it. It was something on at the time, and, you know, kind of, you know, genre TV. There wasn't much around, so if there was genre TV, I tended to try and watch it. And unless I completely hated it, like early Smallville, I, you know, tended to follow it.
But what did you think of the later seasons of Smallville, Paul? Paul, who's beside me?
They were quite hit and miss. I mean, some of the aspects that I quite like, say, for example, the recurrence of Brainiac and Bizarro. But yeah, the last season didn't really make a lot of sense. And I felt that
they'd rushed things
during season 9 with what's his face?
There's a lot of what's his face in Smallville.
Main bad dude, guy that killed Superman in the comics.
Doomsday,
that's one. Yeah, that didn't feel satisfying to me. The ending to season 9. So, yeah, I mean, Supergirl, I've never really read any of the comics, so I wouldn't know, like, any of the her own, you know, kind of personal villains and whatnot. But, we're kind of in the age of superhero kind of saturation. So it depends on whether we want another hero coming to the small screen.
I think part of the problem at the moment is that while Marvel has obviously got its main thing is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the telly at the moment, and we're talking TV here, not what's happening in cinemas, but TV. And they've got those couple of series heading to Netflix, and the Agent Carter series as well. But because obviously part of it's heading to Netflix rather than going, you know, to TV broadcast straight away, it feels like they're not overwhelming people on the small screen, whereas the DC shows just keep getting announced. So we could potentially end up with a point where we've got Arrow, The Flash, Gotham, Constantine, and Supergirl on at the same time. 5 shows.
All starting within the same year.
Like that. It sounds 2 years. A little bit, yeah.
And also keep in mind, perhaps in the US you might obviously have a chance to actually watch all of these, but in the UK, who picks up US shows is so hickledy-pickledy now.
Yeah.
Because basically it's like, well, if FX don't decide to go for it on Sky, and obviously Sky aren't going to put stuff like that on Atlantic, but maybe Sky One, if neither of those pick it up, then it's like, will anyone pick it up? Will terrestrial pick it up? I mean, the fact that Channel 5 went for Gotham is surprising in of itself, and whether or not they can actually commit to it is another matter.
There again, we are seeing a new direction for...
Yeah, that's true, because Viacom's takeover's finishing, as in, like, they're going to be properly at the helm now. So... But what would we like to see in a Supergirl series? So obviously we're saying, oh, we don't want it to be like Smallville.
Obviously make it more Buffy-like, so that, you know, obviously positive representations of, you know, women. You know, don't make her too kind of, oh, look at me, I'm so sexy.
And not too ditzy.
Yeah.
Has anyone else seen the film?
As in the 80s.
Amazing.
Once Upon a Time... in the galaxy far, far away. I did watch that film.
It's not bad. I remember it relatively fondly. You know, sort of it's a product of its time.
It was probably better than... what was the closest Superman movie to that at that point? Which incarnation?
See, was it maybe Superman 3 or, our Quest for Peace, which was shit.
Yeah, I think it was better than that Superman film, so
yeah, definitely
had that going for it. But yeah, I've never really read any of the comics. I've only ever encountered the character when she's like briefly popped up in like something to do with like Justice League, or I know something to do with Superman or whatever. I've never gone out of my way to actually read something about the character. And also, if I know it's like a big thing with Kryptonians happening to be on Earth. But if they could avoid overuse of kryptonite, that'd be great, because that was, other than Monster of the Week, Smallville's other great weakness was the insistence of having kryptonite pretty much every week.
Ironically, Smallville's weakness was kryptonite.
Yeah.
It was, to be fair.
It was, like, so overused. And it's like, yeah, we get it's a weakness, but the kind of dispersal and the amounts involved, like they had a whole, I don't know how much of a spoiler this is. It's a bit of a spoiler if you haven't watch Smallville, but there's this whole subplot in one of the later seasons where it's like a couple of the characters have been slowly collecting together an arsenal of kryptonite because they know it's Superman's weakness. And it's like, but it took them quite a while to amass this arsenal. Meanwhile, prior to this point, and pretty much for every other episode, everyone and their grandma had freaking kryptonite somehow kicking about that they could just conveniently unleash, or it could just inopportunely for Superman suddenly just kind of appear near him and, oh my goodness, I can't do anything, blah, blah. And it was just, it was like, if you wanted to weaken the character, the better way of doing...
Magic.
Yeah.
Or, because the Zatanna episodes were actually quite good.
Sorry, which one?
When Zatanna turned up in Smallville, that usually tends to be good. But the other thing, though, they could have done was that, I mean, his other weakness is the balance between Superman, the persona, and the other persona of being Clark Kent. So it's like that's his real weakness, keeping these two identities apart. I could have just done more with that.
I think to a certain extent, I think one of his other weaknesses, which probably wasn't used as much as kryptonite, was the fact that, you know, he had people that he cared about, and you know, viewing that as a weakness is kind of I mean, occasionally it did I think one of the things about Clark Kent in Smallville was that he had a lot of personal adversity, which I thought was, you know, quite good. But
there was also an unrealistic aspect to the latter seasons of Smallville when he finally ended up at the planet. Was that, I mean, it's like, it's something that the comics eventually recognised, but took them a damn while. But it was him actually working at a proper big newspaper in a great big office. It's like that age of journalism is well over.
Yeah, that's true.
And, like, even when Smallville was out, and so it was kind of like, you had all this tech there and everything. Like, they tended to showcase tech that was a little bit beyond what the public tended to have access to, but like a year or so down the line, you'd often have it. But the work environments and representations of society kind of moved with the times a bit more. So, yeah. But what does this mean for... What do I want to say her name is? Because I only ever hear referred to as Supergirl.
Was it Kara?
Kara, yeah. I don't know enough about the comics. It's only ever what I saw of her in Smallville.
Which, to be fair, obviously...
The film.
Even though she's super powered, she's always been in the shadow of Clark.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I think it'll be an interesting thing for her to be, you know, more Buffy-like in the fact that she'll be her own hero, as it were.
I would find it more interesting than another Superman series. Put it that way, because Superman is got series coming out of his ears over the years. You know, there's no shortage of material there, but when it comes to Supergirl, one movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So the opportunity of being able to do something new with a Kryptonian, it's just so long as they just embrace the fact that you've got a Kryptonian living on Earth, which effectively means you've got someone invulnerable most of the time. You know, the Kryptonians are the true superhero type superpower lot. So yeah, avoid the, oh, I've got a new iPhone, ha ha ha, it's got a kryptonite screen on it, or get kryptonite earrings, or, you know, whatever crap. It's like, just avoid all that and just do something, you know, a bit more interesting with it. It's got more chance now than it would have had, you know, say, you know, 15-20 years ago.
Although, I mean, would we have preferred another female DC character to have their own series, or is Supergirl kind of okay with that?
Not any to choose from, really.
What's their name? The lot that's got Black Canary, Catwoman's sometimes a part of them.
Oh, Birds of Prey.
They tried doing it, obviously, a few years ago, but they could have given that another go. And that would have been even more inclusive.
To be honest, I haven't actually watched it. You've got Black...
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, you got Black Canary tied up in
the Arrow, basement,
so you'd have to go okay. CW. Mm.
But
you've also got a lot of the bad guys and stuff, say like Poison Ivy, who's going to be in Gotham, or at least a foreshadowing to that kind of thing. So that you'd have to really delve into the female that are left over within the DCU.
There's not many.
To put that team together.
And that's another thing that we haven't actually discussed. I mean, if the Supergirl series did actually come out, will it be connected to the filmic DC universe?
That's the thing, because they've split DC, unlike Marvel, don't appear to have taken as much control over all the splintering that's happened with having the TV shows go out. So while Arrow and The Flash have got a degree of crossover going on, everything else is currently quite separate.
Which kind of doesn't make sense, because out of the two universes, obviously DC Universe, it's kind of based on, Earth. But, you know, you have a place like Metropolis and Star City and, you know, places that I don't think are necessarily real, but they're based on locations. Whereas Marvel, they've obviously gone for the real world, where, like, there's, you know, how many, you know, superheroes in New York and Manhattan?
I bet you can't swing a cat in Manhattan without hitting a superhero.
Probably a really annoyed superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leave my kitty alone.
Yeah, stop swinging that super cat or something.
I was going to move us on to our next story. And this is not... I wanted to talk about something that wasn't depressing, that was to do with video games, okay? Because...
That's fair enough. That gaming has... kind of gone through a bit of a depressing kind of time recently.
Listen to last week's episode 103, if you want to know why it's all gone to pan, blah, and
And basically just visit a gaming website in order to kind of get any sense of idea of what it's
although
about.
Although, I will only say on this that it's pleasing that when a bullshit conspiracy is based entirely on chat logs and screenshots, it can be pretty much dismantled comprehensively by more chat logs and screenshots.
But moving on to the happier story, one particular YouTube channel recently finished a playthrough of Fallout 3 where they aimed to where they sort of tried to kill everyone in Fallout 3 that they possibly could. This was by the Many a True Nerd YouTube channel, and I caught wind of this after a Kotaku posted up an interview with one of the team, because it's run by someone called John and someone called Claire. And John and Claire, yeah. And they had an interview which seemed to be coming from, like, John more than anything on Kotaku, and he's like... just talking about what happened, and we will have links to this YouTube series. It went on for like over 7 months, so there's a lot of videos and parts. So I think they were doing it in like 20 odd minutes segments.
Yeah, a lot.
Some commitment.
But their whole YouTube channel appears to be dedicated to sort of like playing games in ways they weren't meant to be played.
Well, I suppose that's good in of itself.
Yeah.
That sounds like a mate of mine. One of the first things he does when he sits down in front of a game is just to see how to break it.
Personally, I'd play through it first and then see how I can break it.
Yeah, I'm kind of traditional like that. You know, I think I'll play the game first. And then, you know, if I'm really just, you know, at a loss of anything to do, see if I can stack all the bodies and all the objects and all the boxes on a level on top of one another just to test out the physics, which is the kind of thing he does.
I mean, I think I was listening to Ono Video Games podcast. I've just
plugged
somewhere else.
That's fine.
But yeah, they were kind of talking at one point about the glitches in Ocarina of Time, where you can kind of get out of the Kokiri Forest.
Deku Tree.
Without doing the Deku Tree and, you know, kind of getting to the Master Sword without having to do all of that. And it's like, if you actually started out knowing those glitches and you played it and you've never played it before, you'd probably get to the end and be like, well, what?
What was the point?
Yeah.
But mind you, in this Fallout 3 playthrough, they had to go through the effort of finding everyone. And it's Fallout 3 is a very large game.
Yes.
In terms of game geography.
One could say that they did want to set the world on fire.
Yes. I don't know, obviously, because I haven't watched all the videos. I watched a bit of, like, first one. You know, what their preferred killing methods were when they could kill. But obviously there's some NPCs that you can't kill. However, by attacking them or people around them, it would antagonise them in ways that started making weird things happening. In the interview with Kotaku, they kind of explained how they killed somebody who has to be alive in order for Liberty Prime to work at the end of the game. And, yeah, so they had to find a way to piss off Liberty Prime so that he would come after them, that they could then kind of lead him towards the gates Liberty Prime destroys in Fallout 3.
Mm.
But the only way they could do that was basically that after killing this person, they had to start basically fights up with the other people around Liberty Prime and keep doing that until they had enough of a sort of, you know, like general local reputation around that Liberty Prime activated and went after them.
Yeah.
And they obviously, everything they were trying to do, they were obviously avoiding console commands in order to like reset stuff. Because obviously if you start messing with console commands, then...
Yeah, it's kind of cheating by itself.
Yeah, and it's not going to sort of achieve the goal. But yeah, there was just some weird stuff going on. And I'm trying to think, is there any games I've tried play? Are there any games any of you have ever tried playing where you've tried to not play as it was intended?
The only one that I can think of at the moment is Final Fantasy VII. Like, I'd go into the debug room and fight those three pyramids to, you know, kind of level up and whatnot, and then start the game from there where I've got, like, all material, all mastered and everything.
I think the only way I've ever, like, played games as they weren't meant to be intended was sort of before the 360 generation with cheat discs.
Hmm.
And just been like, there was at least a couple of playthroughs I did of Final Fantasy X where I just had everything. The sphere grid was my bitch. And I just did whatever the heck I wanted with it because I just had all the spheres.
You could, like, bulk Lulu up to, like, strength.
Yeah, and then Lulu could just be like, let's unleash this Moogle. Oh, what's that? The Moogle's killed this enemy. You know, just break damage barrier like nobody's business. Like, basically, admittedly, with the cheat thing, it didn't come into its own because you didn't want to do the cheats where you added characters to the party before you got them, if you were going to get them, or ones that you would temporarily have but then not have, because it would break the game, the particular cheat discs that I used. But once you had Riku in the party, what was your oyster? You just, especially if you've like had a whole load of items as well, but you, admittedly, you kind of had to wait until you got so far into the game that you had, like, I know, like, maybe, like, you could get weapons with, like, four blank slots, and armor, obviously, with four blank slots, and you could just do crazy things because you had all these items that you could refine into aspects for weapons and armor and just be like, yeah, let's break that damage barrier.
Let's see, thinking there, well, being an old sod, most of my games were, you know, on the Commodore 64 and the like. I had a cheat cartridge. I used it to do, you know, other things with it, like redesigning sprites and, you know, adding things and, you know, learning the assembler code in it. But as part of that, you'd come across variables and I'd be able to hack in infinite lives or infinite time, you know, something like that. Or, you know, start on the fifth level instead of, you know, the first level for stuff. Lots of older games that are around, you know, to play now have got that those kind of features built in. Or you could get listings in magazines where you type them in and they'd say, you know, they'd change values in the computer's RAM. So when you loaded the game up, they'd have the cheats in there. So a slightly more long-winded way of your cheat discs.
I mean, there's been all sorts of... Sorry, were you about to say something?
No.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, there have been all sorts of kind of cheat devices over the years. I mean, I remember poke tapes from the ZX Spectrum. Yeah. And you kind of load them up before you kind of load the game up. And if, like, right at the end, you know, it kind of failed to load the game, you had to start right away from the beginning, loading up the tape and redoing everything. And, yeah, sometimes those were a bugger to get to work.
That was the lazy way of doing it. You should type them all in yourself to start off with, and then find that they printed them with a mistake in the magazine.
I think one game that I sort of, like, without using cheats, tried to play as, and it was the times I've played the Darkness games, because you're offered a lot of opportunity to just kill things with guns, and in fact it's often quite favourable to do that, because they, with the whole mechanic of, you can only transform into the darkness, like, with the arms and that, when you're in shadows, means that when you're in daylight, guns are handy. But I would always try and find ways to extend my presence so that I could be sort of like using the darkness rather than just guns all the time, and try and stealth my way around as much as possible.
I've tried doing that a few times with some games. Like some of the Splinter Cell games, I'll complete them, and then I've gone back, and I think Chaos Theory and Double Agent were two that I just replayed all the way through, but I replayed them using the tricks I'd worked out on the first playthroughs, just so I could see, you know, if I could, you know, get in and get out without killing anyone or setting off any alarms, you know, in those kind of buildings.
With Oblivion, when they did the DLC content for the Wizard's Castle, you could enchant your own armor and stuff like that, but the maximum you could do it was 20%. So you'd put 20% on each piece of armor of invisibility, and then I just walked around the entire game invisible.
Because you're
no one ever saw me coming. Yeah, so I was 100% invisible all the time. So every time I struck someone, they just died, never knew what was coming. Easiest game.
No, I never took, even though I had that downloaded, because I only ever played Oblivion on 360, I never took huge advantage of the Wizard's Tower. Just never felt too inclined towards it.
Just make your own stuff and then just OP everything.
I think what put me off Magic then, that was like just how they changed how to do enchantments and the, sort of tying it in with the Oblivion Stones. It was just too much hassle. I was gonna say there was one of the other, like, you know, this channel playing stuff in ways it wasn't intended. I'm not sure which particular Hitman game, but they've got a Hitman series where they tried not to kill anyone.
That's nice. That's lovely.
Nice, man.
Presumably, I mean, what about the actual people that you meant to kill? As in the targets?
I have no idea. I didn't get a chance to look at it, but if people want to see how the heck they achieved that, I think that's definitely worth a quick peek.
I mean, didn't you do your first run through of Dishonored? That was a no-killy one.
Yeah, that was no-kill ones, but at the same time, it allowed you to do that. You know, you were given means to not kill anyone. It's when there's, like, games where there's a bit less freedom on that it gets far more interesting. So I got whatever was it Clean Hands achievement for Dishonored when I played it the first time.
And you had, like, various trouble because you'd knock out, you know, kind of people, then leave them somewhere, and then the rats will eat them.
Yeah, so basically, if you get to the end of, like, a chapter in Dishonored and it says that, you know, somebody died, and obviously you don't remember killing anyone, you only have the opportunity at that screen that tells you that to then, you have to redo the chapter there and then. If you, like, go to continue it later on or go on to the next chapter, then you won't get the achievement, basically. So the only time you can... Yeah, the amount of times I had to read the entire chapters.
Yeah, that's what kind of drove me mad with that, especially when it was insisting I'd killed someone.
And it's usually because somebody succumbed to rats, or they drowned, like you kind of ended up with their head in some water or something.
To be honest, it does make me wonder about the kind of people that play, you know, Paragon-type characters when given the chance versus people that would play Renegade characters when given the chance. Whether there's kind of, you know, whether there's kind of a correlation with the whole Gamergate thing.
I don't think I want to talk about any correlations between that and anything at the moment.
Just
wait. I was going to say, I think there actually needs to be more video games where you have a choice not to kill things.
Yeah.
You have the option to talk your way out or sneak past.
Well, like my comic thing. The other day.
Yeah.
Well, say the other day, the other week, with Mass Effect.
Talk your way out of it.
That'd be brilliant.
Achievement unlocked, Picard.
It'd be cool to be able to kind of, if they kind of remade the Mass Effect trilogy and had it so that you could somehow talk your way through, like, absolutely everything. That would be brilliant, you know, just kind of getting up to the, you know, kind of Reapers and being like, you don't want to do this. Okay.
We have a kind of existential conversation a bit. Like, has anyone here seen Darkstar?
Darkstar. Sounds familiar, but is that what was it?
The Jim Henson film.
I think it might have been Jim Henson, but it was like 70s sci-fi, and they were just like demolition crew going around exploding planets in out of control planets and stars. And they had bombs with AIs.
Okay.
So there's one of the best known parts of the film is one of the crew having an existential conversation with the bomb because the bomb wants to explode even though it's still attached to the ship. And of course, they don't want the bomb to explode because it's still attached to the ship. So he's having this philosophical conversation with the bomb and trying to, you know, explain to it that, well, your purpose is to explode, yes, but you will explode eventually. You don't need to explode now. If you, you know, if you don't explode now, it's not that you've failed, because you will. And it doesn't quite work. But yeah, that just came to mind there.
Yeah, I can see that. But it, do you know what I mean? There's just not the, like, Deus Ex or Human Revolution almost gave us that option, and then there were those outsourced boss battles, and...
Wasn't that fixed with the Wii U version?
I haven't got far enough in the Wii U version to.
I've got the director's cut on Steam, and they have kind of fixed it, but they are still there.
How is it fixed exactly?
Well, the bit that I've got up to, it's, you know, the first boss.
Yeah.
And there seem to be turrets that you can position instead, which will take him out rather than you just having to, you know, run around like a blue-ass fly trying to chuck barrels at him.
They could have introduced, like, I don't know, like some kind of... Because if you're doing a stealthy character in that game, you're going to be reasonably good at hacking. So they could have had some kind of mini-game whereby you find somewhere to hide and you quickly do this thing that allows you to hack a bit of them to bring part of their systems down. Then you have to keep moving, quickly hacking a bit, moving, staying out of fire. That's all they had to do to have an alternative to shooting things down.
Even if they wanted to make it more difficult, you know, throwing a couple of EMP grenades in there or something.
Maybe they've done that for the later ones, but the only difference I could see was that there was more to hack and you could get, you know, some... like, you know, security systems online to attack him instead.
Nah.
The problem I had was I hadn't been upgrading my hacking.
Ah.
So it's like, oh, hooray! I've been upgrading my stealth and, you know, everything like that, and I'm not high enough level to actually hack the turrets, so I'm back at square one.
I remember the lessons of Elder Scrolls games in this regard. It's like, yes, I want to be stealthy, but I'm going to need to know how to use lockpicks.
Yeah. But I've been doing stuff like that and, you know, getting past security, but I hadn't been, you know, doing the hacking and stuff. So I think I was one level away from being able to, you know, do it on one of my stats, and it was, I hate you.
Okay, so I'm going to move us on now to what we've been up to. I suppose we could discuss the episode of Doctor Who that was on Saturday, episode 3. Robot of Sherwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, okay. you're currently the more
positive,
more optimistic Doctor Who fan that is currently involved in this particular episode.
Yeah, I'm very pro New Who. I'm kind of waning away from the Grand Moff at the moment, but I still have faith, especially Mark Gatiss. But I found that episode a little bit uncomfortable for me. I think I was more on the Doctor's side of things when he's talking about Robin shouldn't exist and stuff like that. So it felt unresolved at the end for me.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. So, that's exactly what I said in a companion piece.
Well, that's on hexdimension.com now. Okay. I didn't include my thoughts in that piece because I didn't think I had enough to contribute to the conversation. But there were two things that struck me about the episode, which they kind of ignored in their own... Well, one bit they ignored in their own ways of interpreting history versus legend, and another just because it's... I'll describe stuff. So the history-legend issue. So, like, Robin's like, oh, yeah, well, fine, turn into legend and all that, and everything becomes, like, mysterious and nobody knows the truth of it. Fine, fine. But he's a pompous, cocky ass in that episode. Now, if there are traits that are probably not going to exist much in what actually happened versus what passes down into legend, it would make more sense that Robin as a character was kind of like, well, not reserved, but a bit more calculating, you know?
Mm.
And knew when to keep his mouth shut just that bit more. So that in the legend, he does seem cocky and sure of himself. But that's only because he kind of had a bit of brains kind of going on, whereas he didn't come across as someone who had much in the way of brains in this episode. And it would have made sense that he would be a bit of a cocky idiot in the legends, because the legends would have also been written not just by, you know, those who admired him, but the people that, if he had existed, the people that would have been most pissed off by him, which would have been the people writing history, because they were the ones with the money and the education. So they would have been the ones that have written him as a cocky, annoying twit. So that's my first issue with the episode.
Ooh.
He was too much of a cocky twit. Here. The second issue, and this was the other main issue, was the fact that this was the person Clara, or the time and place and person Clara wanted to meet. Is Clara an English teacher?
I believe so.
As far as we can ascertain. Yeah, which means she's got an English degree. There's only a few people, or few English degree types, and that's only because they've gone on to do something very specific, either for their dissertation or for further study, who would be really interested in Robin Hood, and that's for people who are really interested in medieval stuff. Clara's never before this shown any sign of any interest in medieval stuff, but she's an English grad. English grads learn about a lot of different times and periods when doing their degrees, so it seemed really unrealistic that of all the people that she's ever learned about, she wanted to meet Robin Hood. And to me, the fact that they did a Robin Hood episode really therefore felt like they were pandering to the American audience more than us.
Have you noticed how all of the companions, whenever they get the choice to go, anywhere in time, they all choose different locations? It's never like, oh, what's that? You want to see Will Shakespeare? Well, we've kind of already done that. So, yeah, with the other companions. So, yeah, we can't do that again, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I've used it me voucher.
I think the feeling that was trying to be conveyed at the beginning of the episode was that Robin Hood was more of a romantic vision that she had. And I also think she was trying to play on the Doctor's more kind of stubborn, not niceness, and baiting him into, like, you're just going to say this guy didn't exist and he wasn't real, because she probably knows that he didn't exist and wasn't real. So it's her kind of fantasy left over from 11, and the real world awakeness that has come in from 12, if that makes sense, without being too pompous and reading too much into Mark Gatiss' story.
No, that makes sense from there.
I'm just saying, if Clara was a real English grad, she wouldn't have even cared, even after Fantasies of Childhood at all or anything about Robin Hood. She'd been like, take me to Hemingway, take me to, I know, Jane Austen. Or Jane Austen would have been interesting, because they could have done a whole thing about how Northanger Abbey, while it came off as a completely satirical piece, was actually based off of true events. That would have been hilarious.
Would it?
Yes, because it's a really funny novel. It takes the mick out of gothic romance. So yeah.
Okay.
Or they could have met the, well, not the real Charles Dickens. They could have met some. They could have met any number of, you know, writers basically. Or have they encountered Chaucer during New Who yet?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, Chaucer. Chaucer would have been good for an English grad to want to go see.
So this is more of a case of your English grad kind of nerddom, kind of...
Yeah, going like, nah, English grad, we don't want to do that. Unless, because they really liked medieval studies, in which case, maybe.
You see, of all the reasons I wasn't a particular fan of that episode, that's not one of them.
Yeah, I think it's a very niche complaint.
Yeah.
Got to admit, yeah, it is.
I think a lot of the brief for writing that episode was, let's get a Robin Hood action figure and let's get some new robots into it.
Oh, you sick.
That gets me through the day.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I think that's largely right.
There's a lot tied in so far with the new series, not to go too much into like the overarching story, because we're only three episodes in, but everything has been robotic / part robotic, going towards this paradise. So I think that could be, we could see this as more of a theme.
Yeah,
the kind of robots and stuff.
That was set as a destination for the ship, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I want to move us on now to what we...
Wait.
Yeah. One more Doctor Who point.
Well, first of all, the bickering.
Oh, yeah.
Annoyed me slightly. So that was a bit annoying, but I thought a lot more could have been done with it, because it reminded me of a Tom Baker story. Hang on, I've got it noted down here. State of Decay.
Yeah.
Which I'll nerd out here and point out that I had the, I think it was a book adaptation of. And the idea was that the Doctor and Romana find like a medieval type, you know, planet that's under the control of these three vampires who rule it from a castle, and it turns out that it's a crashed ship.
Of course, it's part of the E-Space trilogy.
Yes.
Isn't
it? Yes. Yeah. And I'm not, you know, for anyone who's a new Who fan and hasn't seen the old ones, first of all, shame on you! Second of all, go and watch, you know, stories like this, because, you know, even though they're a little bit rickety to look at them, the stories were still good, and I think this, you know, this had a better idea, and it did it better than Robin Bloody Hood.
Okay, I want to move on to what we've been up to, not spending too long, but what we've been up to that had nothing to do with Doctor Who. Anyone? Chris?
Okay, well, just to kind of like wave my geekness around, I've been talking last couple of years what to do with all my old VHSs, because I have hundreds of the blooming things, probably like a lot of other people who haven't kind of got rid of them yet. And they're not worth anything. Charity shops don't even want them now. So what do you do with a big pile of VHSs? You make a throne. So that was my Saturday evening. I sat down with a friend and we built a throne of VHSs. And I'm really proud of that.
I can't imagine it being very comfy, to be honest.
It really was, though, because you think you've got all that space in between the actual VHSs and the case.
Mm.
That's all cushioning.
Oh, I
so
suppose...
when you sit on that...
I just thought of the actual cassettes themselves.
Oh, no, the bulk of the actual chair and the arms were made up of the cases. you've got DS9 then, yeah. down one side, and you're sitting on the X-Files. It's a lovely piece.
I'm not going to read too much into that.
No. But yeah, so that was my kind of my nerdy Saturday afternoon, was building a throne of VHSs, and there is going to be a time-lapse video on my YouTube channel at some point.
Sweet. Have you been up to anything else?
Well, on the game side of things, I've got myself addicted to a very rubbish iPad app. I think it's on the Android as well. WWE Supercard. So WWE World Wrestling Entertainment. And it's kind of like a cross between Top Trumps and a very limited CCG, where you kind of you feed wrestlers that you win to your other wrestlers to make them bigger so that you compete better, so that you get more
Wait,
wrestlers.
This game endorses just, cannibalism.
Hang on. Yeah, he did say feed, because I'm thinking, no. Must have missed.
Well, they class it as training. I'm doing air quotes here. but your card disappears. You click on it and it disappears, and your wrestler gets bigger.
Would it be unfair for me to suggest that it's into their basement?
It could be, yeah, possibly the boiler room.
Yeah,
and it's really, really addictive. It's so simple, but I'm waking up in the middle of the night and changing my wrestlers around because there's an ongoing tournament system that goes on.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
is it?
That's my geeky game.
Is it free to play or paid?
Completely free to play. There is a pay for option where you can buy additional cards, but they're all random cards, and the amount you pay, it's not worth it. You might as well just play a little bit more, and you win those cards anyway. So it's a nice little game, and it's tied me up quite a lot.
Okay. Retroid, have you finished watching Utopia yet?
I have. I think last week I just watched the first three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, watched in very short order the final three episodes of the first season. And then because the second one was on 4OD, sat down and watched those two.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to give too much away because it is full of, it's a conspiracy series.
Yeah, you don't want to give away too much, when people haven't watched it.
Yeah, I'll just say I found the first series very satisfying to watch. And the second series was incredibly slow to watch because it kind of had to restart certain bits and, took a few leaps with what had happened in the first series. With the, oh, come on, seriously, that kind of leap. And, as in, not like jumping the shark, it's just you've been involved in this. Surely you thought, you didn't think this would be, so simple. Or, so self-explanatory, or just what it appears. So, basically the second series of Utopia took until about the fourth, fifth episode of six to really get going, and then it ends on a bloody cliffhanger.
Oh, that's nice of them.
That's very nice. Whereas the first series is, pretty self-contained, so I was interested in, where they'd go, with that. But I found the second series a bit disappointing, and I'm hopeful that the third one, seeing as they seem to have got more into their stride and introduced more things. Again, trying not to spoiler it. But I will say the first episode of the second series of Utopia has one of the Musketeers and what's the face, red-haired lady, nothing, Jon Snow from Game of Thrones.
Oh, brilliant.
So I was pleased, especially with the second.
Was there anything else you've been up to?
Well, two things. I haven't finished doing, playing or reading either. So I'll just say I've been playing Velocity Ultra X on the PlayStation Vita, which was one of the PlayStation Plus games for this month. It's something like the second or third iteration of, the Velocity games. I think the original was possibly something like a PlayStation Mini, and then possibly a PS3 version. I'm not entirely sure whether I'm just remembering playing the Mini on the PS3 because they're compatible. But with this version of it, it's now not only a vertically scrolling sort of puzzle shooter where you can teleport in past barriers and get different power-ups and all that kind of thing. It's more a puzzle game than it is a shooter, but it's now also got very simple Metroidvania on foot sections for your pilot. And I'm still in the process of playing that, but it's proving surprisingly enjoyable. And I've just been reading some of the comics, some of the Star Trek comics from the Humble Bundle. That's still up at the moment, so I've been geeking out and reading some next gen comics on my tablet. And they're not bad, but I'm occasionally finding the artwork a little bit interesting. Or some of the bits in the story with the you can kind of tell that it doesn't have the series Bible whacking it over the head for this, because they have things like Data being affected by a psychic virus. And he's just, he's an android!
I wouldn't have thought that you'd need a show Bible to work that one out.
Well, no, but in general, I found the stories kind of interesting. One was a society that was just joining the Federation, where it was three genders instead of two, and the soon-to-be leader of this world was only in a relationship with one of the other genders, and this was seen as perverted. So there were assassinations planned against her and things like that, because it was him, her, and it. So it was a very thinly veiled sci-fi thing of gay marriage.
I remember that being in that, not that storyline, but that planet being within Next Generation.
Well,
I'm sure they did have.
There was an episode where they had androgynous, and
they're the ones that carried the children or something.
Well, there was an in Alien Nation, they had a thing like that where they had the the male, female, and what they'd call the Benom. But I don't know if you're thinking of that, but yeah, it's not the first time they've had a trigender species in a sci-fi.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was all right, and one of the shorter stories was for fans of the original Star Trek, they had Red Jack. No.
Not a fan of the original series.
No.
It's the Jack the Ripper.
Ooh.
Episode of the original one where Scotty gets accused of murdering this dancing girl on a planet where they go for shore leave, and it turns out that it's an alien sort of energy creature that can go from one person to another, and it feeds on fear. Yeah. So it's one where it gets loose on a planet after coalescing after decades, because the original Enterprise sort of transported it out into deep space and let it disperse, and it wreaks havoc on a planet and then gets onto the Enterprise, but they stop it.
Because that's the being no more Enterprise.
Because it would be a problem for everything else if they didn't. But yeah, in general, I'm reading them and go, yeah, these are all right. And especially seeing as I only put down $1, for the base package. But I'm thinking, yeah, I think I'll actually stump up more and get the rest of them.
Paul, what have you been up to? You've not been up to much, have you?
No, not really. Yeah.
Was the main event for you Walking Dead this week then?
Yep, it's Walking Dead. Dead. Yeah, so I've been watching recorded from Channel 5.
Five star,
pardon me.
It's all Channel 5.
Yeah. And yeah, it's I think we've got a couple more episodes to go of the fourth season. But at the moment, I am quite enjoying it. It's quite horrific and emotionally interesting
and draining.
Yeah.
Where exactly are you in the season now, then?
Oh, how can we do this without spoilering?
We could go for vague symbols. People found train tracks.
Right.
That's as far as we've got. Nobody's got to the end of these train tracks.
Okay.
Okay. That's as far in as they've gotten on Channel 5's 5-star at the moment.
Does that help you out at all, or not really?
Have there been any deeply distressing psychological moments?
Yes.
A few, but it depends on what you define as deeply distressing. Like babbling on a podcast. That's quite distressing. Say
involving younger.
We've seen the intros to such pangs.
Right.
If that makes sense.
That's why, you know, a little while back when I was saying about I'd been reading the, you know, the graphic novels from another Humble Bundle comic package. You're saying, oh, the TV series doesn't seem quite as traumatising. I say, oh, just wait with this season. It's quite its moments, this one.
Mm, absolutely.
But yeah, if you haven't reached the end of the, you know, the season yet, there's still moments to, you know, to come.
I kind of guessed that there would be. It seems like it's a very good series, actually. Well season.
It was. I was very pleased with it.
I mean, it kind of, because the first season had like just the encampment and then kind of moving on, and then the second season was at purely at Herschel's farm. Yeah. Then third season was the prison. Which kind of leaked into the fourth season, and it's like, I'm not sure where they're defining the seasons in the story, if you know what I mean.
I kind of like that they're not.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I do. I kind of like the fact that, you know, the prison has, you know, been more than a season.
Yeah.
And for that reason, you couldn't tell when things were going to happen.
Absolutely, you didn't
again,
have to...
You know, trying to, you know, keep off the spoilers, but, you know, there wasn't a, well, it's the end of the season.
Yeah, we're going to... Yeah, so it's the end of the season, so we're going to, you know, basically destroy the settlement and, you know, just, like, kill off one or two of the main characters and blah. And it's like,
because this is how we do a season.
Yeah. And this throws that out the window, which is really good, actually. It makes it far more... Well, you're kind of not expecting stuff to happen.
Yeah.
So it's far more traumatic in that respect. Yes. And effective.
There's more suspense.
There is more suspenders, yes. Sorry.
Are they still doing it? Did you say they were talking about two episodes a week?
Yeah, they're still doing that.
Well, that's rather good then.
Yeah. I know, I think... Series 5 is airing in the US soon, like not long after like this airing finishes.
Yeah, I've seen trailers go up and everything.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting.
But again, when will we get to watch it? Because like, we still don't know if Channel 5 have got screening rights, if it's based off of just FX showing it. Because that's the reason why the fourth season hasn't come out on DVD or anything or Blu-ray yet.
Yeah. I mean, what would be nice to do, but I doubt if they are going to do it, is basically to have it so that it kind of comes out at the same time as the US, because, you know, we've had stuff lately where we've had, you know, kind of very little gap in between. Although, obviously, that leads to cases of, channels putting off the latter end of the series because of the American gap. You know,
It really annoyed the hell out of me when they split the latest season, so, you know, season 4, the one that you're just watching now, when they split that in two. on FX.
Ooh, it does make me wonder where they actually... Well, presumably it'll be like... Was it directly in half?
I'm not quite sure. Oh, I'd have to go back. It's just, you know, with... unfortunately, my memory of it is all squashed together, especially with, you know, reading the... in quite a few of the graphic novels lately.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm a bit shot when it comes to where they actually stopped it.
Yeah. So I can imagine that being very, very frustrating for certain... in between certain episodes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, and I think it's Emily's turn to say what she's been up to, other than knitting.
I'm making a Triforce cushion. There's, you know.
For a second there, I thought he was going to say I'm making a Triforce. Well, a knitted Triforce.
Yeah, it could do that too. I finally played the first episode of The Wolf Among Us by Telltale. Because I wanted to write about it on Hex, finally. I was like, okay, well, I need to play it, obviously. So I've been playing that, and I really enjoyed the first episode, and it was everything I hoped a video game based on the Fables universe would be. That's my ringing endorsement. And I'm looking forward to playing the next parts.
Presumably you're not going to tell us much more about it, because you want to drive people to Hex.
Well, it's not just that, but... You don't. It's a mystery, crime mystery thriller type thing.
So there's not much that you can say about it without spoiling it.
No.
That's fair enough.
You know, at least with something written, I can sort of put signposts, or in the case of fact, I can use blackouts and go, oh, look, you don't have to read this bit, it's blacked out. There we go. But it's just nice seeing the characters talking and moving around and that. And I like Big B Wolf even more than I previously did now. I think he's actually a pretty okay fable. Big B Wolf. And I already have my theories as to... Because obviously there's been a crime, and it's like, who's done it? And that kind of runs throughout the entire thing. It's a pretty serious crime. I have my theories as to who it is. But you haven't had any options so far to, like, when you've been asked to basically need, like, say, who do you think it is? Like, in the first episode, you have none of the options for the person I suspect it might be. So whether or not it is the case, but to me, he seems the most obvious suspect at the moment. But, yeah.
So does that mean, like, at the beginning, you can kind of point the finger at somebody, and as long as you know for a fact that they're the person, then you can...
No.
Basically shortcut the game.
No, because you still have to acquire evidence, or else the Fable community is not exactly going to believe you. And that's if you get near enough to them. The suspects have this habit of, not disappearing permanently most of the time.
But being sneaky.
Yeah, or being disappeared by others. And
like ninjas.
I've also, I can't remember how many episodes ago that I said I was reading this. I'm still reading, was it Perito Street Station by Chino, is it Melville? That dude who likes writing long fantasy novels. Well, I say fantasy. Sci-fi, fantasy, sort of steampunk, but not quite novels. And it's finally, this thing's over 800 pages long, and it's not the only thing I've been reading, and finally...
And it's not massive font either.
it's pretty long. And finally, it's kind of got to the sort of the meteor kind of, like, the drama has properly boiled up now, and everything's going to shit. And for that, I'm very much enjoying it at the moment when I do read it.
You're enjoying things going to shit?
It's dramatic. There's like it's a the way Melville writes. It's quite a slow burn. Like he really drags things out. He's one of those authors that likes to spend a lot of time describing the surroundings and what characters might be wearing and how they might look. And so, if you want to get through the book quickly, you have to keep skim reading for bits of actual plot.
It does make me wonder whether they could, like, you know, kind of with digital versions of kind of books, whether you could have the option to kind of take all that crap out and just basically focus on the plot. That'd be interesting.
And then I can imagine authors basically going on strike if you allowed that.
That's true.
So, you know. So that's what I've been up to. I want to move us on to our final bit for tonight, our feature. Well, according to Hollywood, the summer box office season has now ended. Apparently Labor Day weekend for them, after that's been and gone, that's when the summer season ends. And, you know, people have been tossing up their figures and bloody blah. And apparently, I'm not sure if it's the domestic market or the international market as a whole. But last week, everyone industry-wise was freaking out because the money brought in this season was $4.05 billion, which was a 14.7% drop from the same period last year. As, you know, there's a panicking, oh, we didn't have as much money this summer, despite the fact that obviously Guardians of the Galaxy came out and everyone became obsessed with that film, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it does seem, 'cause I mean, you can't go on like every year making more money than you did the previous year, because eventually you're going to get to a point where, you know, you've saturated, you know, stuff, and you just can't earn any more money, or, you know, can't earn more money from it, if that makes sense. But otherwise Hollywood would, you know, eventually own the planet.
I think
do we know if that's inflation adjusted, or whether it's just, you know, dollar for dollar.
I think it was inflation adjusted for inflation. It says that in the article that I looked at from Guardian. It's adjusted for inflation. It was the worst summer since 1997, apparently, which is like, okay. But the thing is that this is just US figures. Because actually, if I think about the amount that US gross for the films, like you were looking at about $200 million for like several of the films, taken for domestic gross, so that is what they made domestically, and that they're shitting themselves over that, which is kind of crazy because the Chinese market is becoming so big to Hollywood, and it's like, so you're worrying about what you're doing domestically, but you've got an audience in another country that is, let's see, if the population of America is like, well, it's under 365 million. Population of China is like over a billion.
Yeah.
I think it's probably some people in the industry turning around going, hold on, we don't want to rely on, you know, kind of foreign money.
Well, yeah, and obviously like the entry requirements for selling a film in China are pretty strict. So obviously you've got to have, if you don't have China featured in the film in some way, then you are restricted from sort of import embargoes, that they only bring in so many foreign films a year. But then there's like the rest of the world. Like I was looking, when you look at like individual like takings like internationally for films versus US gross, as like US gross is usually around, sort of like for some of the big ones, like Guardians of the Galaxy is like 200 odd million. But then internationally, it's taken over like $500 million.
So it's pretty much doubling or more when you take into account international markets.
But the who would like to know the top 20 films in the US this summer? Anyone?
Well, I think you're going to tell us anyway.
I'm going to tell you anyway. Okay. Yeah,
please tell us, I believe.
In reverse order, starting at number 20, was Planes, Fire and Rescue. Then it was Let's Be Cops, Think Like a Man 2.
Oh, God, that sounded brilliant. I don't even know anything about it. But.
Hercules, The Purge Anarchy, Tammy, Edge of Tomorrow, Lucy, and I want to point out that overall that film's still got time to gross because it only recent, well, so it's still running.
It's still in places.
Yeah. The Fault in Our Stars, Neighbours, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comes in at number 10. Then it's House
I'm
Train.
So glad of that.
Then it's House Train Your Dragon 2, 22 Jump Street, Godzilla, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, People Have No Taste, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, X-Men Days of Future Past, in at number 4, Melissa, the thing with Angelina Jolie.
Maleficent.
At number three, Transformers Age of Extinction at number two, followed by Guardians of the Galaxy at number one.
Can I just say that you can say anything, and as long as you say it with confidence, you can usually get away with it. It's when you go...
Good night, folks. No,
we're not either. What have you done?
It's just... I don't know, maybe this is because this was the US summer period, sort of like what came in their top 20. I'm very scared by the fact that Transformers Age of Extinction, which was widely slated, and I don't know many people who did enjoy it. I mean, the film, it wasn't... I want to say it wasn't as bad as 2, but there were bits about 2 that I actually liked, whereas I found it almost impossible to like anything about Age of Extinction.
I've not seen it yet, but I will, because I grew up watching and
you're a sucker for Transformers. You're a sucker for Transformers is what you're telling us.
Yeah, even though I think all the films have been awful to one degree or another, you know, ranging from simply shit to I think it's time we burn all film cameras.
So what you're basically saying is that you're a little bit of a masochist.
I must be.
But yeah, so that place, you know, placing number 2 is interesting. Maleficent being at number 3. That was, again, widely slated, and people weren't that impressed with it. Like, people have been looking forward to it, but it wasn't necessarily as good. But the next one, Days of Future Past, which a lot of people were raving about when it was released, critics and fans alike, is in at number 4. And it's like, well... How did that happen?
At least it's up there.
Yeah, at least it's up there. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Where's the Lego movie?
It's the summer period.
It didn't count for it.
It was released before their blockbuster months.
I was about to say that would mean that everything was not awesome.
I'm glad that How to Train Your Dragon 2 got higher than Planes, Fire and Rescue, which I would like to reference my dad's viewing experience of Planes, Fire and Rescue, because he took youngest bro to see it at the cinema, and he said it was only just over an hour long. He did not...
Really?
Yeah, he was surprised and was quite annoyed, because it's like, well, what the heck have you paid for at this point? It's like, I get that it's for a younger kid audience, but it sounded like it was shorter than the previous film, and shorter than obviously the Cars films. So
that's a bit great, isn't it?
But you looking at overall, the top 7 films all grossed over $200 million.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And they're all sci-fi related, except for Maleficent.
Yeah.
Which is more fantasy, but it's definitely got a good nerd following in there.
It does.
Then you only skip one.
Yeah.
It makes me sad that The Amazing Spider-Man 2 beat Godzilla. That's a film.
Although Godzilla was successful enough that they're already talking about getting some of the same people back to do a sequel. So.
Yeah, meanwhile, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is languishing over, was it the Sinister Six film that they want to do, and they're not even sure about the dates for that, but The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was not a good film.
Can I just say that I've not heard of Neighbours? I've heard of Bad Neighbours, but...
No, I think that's what it is.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, it's just that obviously they couldn't call it Neighbours over here because people would have confused it with the soap opera.
The Australian soap opera?
Yeah.
Does America not get Neighbours then?
I'm going to see that.
The weaponized CGI version of Bouncer.
there isn't because people can't be bothered to properly compile it. There isn't what happened over the summer in the UK. But would people like to know what the top 20 films in the UK this year have been so far?
Anybody? We'll give you a hint. It's very different.
What if we say no?
Was there a Keith Lemon film? Probably. Oh, no, hang on. Oh, God, it's going to be Mrs. Brown's Boys, isn't it? That's going to be one of the most popular. I heard that was very popular.
Shall I just reach the top 20? So this is for this. This is for the entire 2014 so far. And number 20, we've got the Grand Budapest Hotel, followed by The Fault in Our Stars, followed by Mr. Peabody and Sherman, followed by Mrs. Brown Boys D Movie, then Rio 2, Neighbours. Oh, it might be the same film. Godzilla, 22 Jump Street, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Maleficent, 12 Years a Slave, Transformers Age of Extinction. Well, 12 Years a Slave is at 10, Transformers Age of Extinction is 9. Then it's The Wolf of Wall Street, How to Train Your Dragon 2, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Guardians of the Galaxy is at number 5, X-Men Days of Future Past is ahead of it at number 4, The In-Betweeners 2 is at number 3, I will explain my reasons behind not grimacing whilst I said that in a moment. 2 is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and 1 is The Lego Movie. But keep in mind that obviously this is for the entire year, and the films that are on this list that were released over the summer period, they're obviously judging a longer period than of release than the American cinema. So some of these films are very much still being shown. Certainly, In-Betweeners 2 is still in. Guardians is obviously still in, and How to Train Your Dragon 2 is still on a lot of places.
Can I just say that I think it would be amazing if they merged the Amazing Spider-Man 2 and How to Train Your Dragon 2 in How to Train Spider-Man 2?
Yeah. Could work.
No?
No.
Okay.
The In-Betweeners 2, I think, has been one of the best grossing comedy films in British cinema for quite a while, which is pretty bad because there's just so many things wrong with the second In-Betweeners movie. People didn't like the first one, but the first one had balance, and the second one threw out the balance and just ruined everything.
Yeah, it was. Cause, I mean, there's kind of gross out comedies, and then there's kind of this is actually borderline kind of no. I mean, it's not the fact that it was offensive. It was just the fact that it was just so gross that it kind of lost its humour, I found, when it tried to be too gross.
Yeah. But, and you getting back to the issue of, is the summer box office in trouble?
Well, no, not really.
Not really. I think part of the issue is that summer period, summer holidays, kids are about. They're not all off at school camp, even in the US. And there was a distinct lack of films suitable for those under the age of 12.
Obviously, there was one or two, like How to Train Your Dragon 2, but...
But they weren't, like... I mean, How to Train Your Dragon 2, when summer certainly... I don't know when it came out in the US, but when the summer holidays, like, rolled round over here... How to Train Your Dragon 2 had already been out for quite a while, and then the summer holiday started, and any screenings, they've just kept it on because there were no other recent kids films around. And then you had I haven't seen Planes, Fire and Rescue, I've only seen trailers, but I did have the misfortune of seeing The Nut Job
with
Littlest Brother, and that was a pretty diabolical kids film.
So what you're basically trying to say is that if they actually had films that targeted, like, all age groups, like decent films,
yeah,
that targeted all age groups, they'd probably earn more money than trying to target a 12 to 18 market, maybe.
Yeah, there's just a lot of films that would have been unsuitable for family audiences, and considering that, I mean, okay, American audiences are a bit more conservative, at least when it comes to family. Stuff they're going to take families to. So it just seems a bit weird that... I mean, basically the films that are in that top 20 list there are pretty much the only kids' films that were really out over the summer. Anyway, I mean, The Nut Job doesn't come into the top 20. They obviously had it out over there.
Obviously, Lucy isn't really a...
That's very much no.
Neither's The Purge.
Anarchy. No, The Purge is probably the... Actually, The Purge... On the US top 20, that is probably the highest age rated film there, probably. That's either like a, what are their age ratings? Like MA Is it 15? Anyone?
Something like that.
Or it was an NC-17, probably an MA-15.
Oh, NC-17, yeah.
But they got one below that, which is like MA-15.
Hmm.
I think.
Well, I think it's like PG-13, and then it effectively goes to R. And
yeah. But I suppose in a way there were a lot of new films this year that came out during the summer period, in that it was IPs that hadn't been explored before, so they weren't direct sequels.
Well, there was but some, then, about half, I would say.
Yeah, and then obviously you had a lot of direct sequels. Now, Transformers Age of Extinction, while it may be the second highest grossing summer film for the US this year...
it's an abomination.
Yeah.
If you're talking IPs, though, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy... there's a very good argument there for everyone who's been invested in the Marvel U so far is going to follow on. So it's kind of a sequel within that group of films, even though it is a new bunch of properties. Mm. It still kind of gets a little fallback from, oh, you've seen Thor, you've seen Captain America, here's the next thing we're doing for you.
Yeah, it's got that sort of commonality to it.
There, I think.
Especially with the... what was it? Not Destiny Stones. The
Infinity Stones.
That's one. Infinity Stones,
which have been slowly accumulated over the course of the films, and that. I don't know. It's just I
think you've even got an argument for Maleficent there as well, because that is what happens with Sleeping Beauty on the flip side. So
yeah,
you've already got a buy in there for that audience. So really, your top 10 films are all spinning off, or at least related to, and have a strong following already.
Mm.
So the only
in the American charts.
The only thing that was new in the top 10, which is at number 10, would be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But obviously, that's based on.
Yeah, but I would argue that there aren't enough dedicated Turtles fans around these. We are not at the height of Turtles mania like we were in the early 90s. Pre-96, we're nowhere near that level of fever like amongst kids and that.
True, but I think that's probably because of a saturated market.
Years ago.
They did.
Oh, they've rebooted it several times, like the animated show. There's been probably because it went from, it either went from Nickelodeon to somebody else or from somebody else to Nickelodeon.
It's now with Nickelodeon.
Yes, yeah, so and there's been at least two, I think, different series under them, and there was one before the transfer as well. And obviously they had, like, at least one film in the last 10 years as well. Yeah, that wasn't this summer's film.
Which I actually quite liked, to be honest. Yeah, it was a bit, you know, cheesy and whatnot, but...
It was, like, based off of one of the events from one of the more recent cartoon series. But, yeah, that's... Ooh, I suppose,
also
yeah,
it's... Also another...
Godzilla's a remake.
Well, another argument with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is people, say, my age, who've got kids of the right age to go and see it, saw it when they were a kid and have good memories and kind of want to share that. So
yeah, I think it's definitely
a generation.
Yeah. It's not something entirely new. It's something that was already there.
Yeah. So you've definitely got a tie in there. I mean, most of the top 10 films are all, say, films that when they went up to the studios went, yeah, all right, you've got a history with that. We can buy into that. Whereas you look at the next 10 films, and there's a couple in there, say The Purge, Planes, but most of them are kind of like, well, we'll give something a shot. So it's edging out, all right. It's getting a bit better than it was a couple of years ago.
Mind you, The Purge Anarchy is a sequel or a prequel, but
that's what I mean. Purge and Planes.
Obviously,
and, apparently The Purge is a lot better than its original film as well. So,
And obviously The Fault in Our Stars is based on the book.
Of course.
I don't think there can be anything really conclude. Like, they're worried about having lost money this summer, and it's like, well...
I think in a way, though, looking at, you know, the top 10 at least... I can kind of understand why there's actually so many superhero things coming to TV nowadays.
It's all at the cinema.
Well, it's not necessarily all that's on. It's just that it's the highest grossing stuff in the cinema.
Yeah.
But, I think I want to start wrapping things up at this point. Because, I mean, we looked at what was going to happen with the summer box office in episode 71, and I was a bit more excited about things since then, before then, and then since, I've managed to see Guardians, Transformers, X-Men, Amazing Spider-Man. Actually, those are the only ones on that list I've watched from the US one.
So I've not seen any of those. Doing very well.
Yeah. Amazing, you know, I wasn't impressed with a lot of them. And I know they can't, obviously, as Paul was saying, they can't expect as big of returns necessarily every year, because since last year, there's been improvements in home entertainment anyway and stuff like streaming and that. So people might be like, oh, it's a bit expensive to go to the cinema, because it can be expensive to go to the cinema in terms of like ticket costs and condiments and that, and travelling there.
It's about a month's worth of Netflix.
It's more than a Netflix subscription, so yep. People might have streamed something instead. So, yeah, I don't think Hollywood necessarily has anything to worry about, but they could do with, you know, maybe more kids' films that aren't the nut job, please. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from
Chris Nichols. If you like what you hear, I've got a YouTube account. Just look for Brit Geek or the Games Repository, and I'm kind of in a couple of places there on YouTube. That's about my online presence.
Right, and it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. I'm not going to plug my usual site. I want to say that if you're vaguely interested in what's happening with some geeky knitting stuff I'm up to at the moment, and general geeky knitting stuff, you can check out my new Tumblr at geekyknittingexperiments.tumblr.com. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com. I think I really need to go to bed because I'm so tired. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Good night.